You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
After watching the 9/11 events unfold, journalist Lawrence Wright emailed The New Yorker and asked to be assigned to the story. Over the course of the next 5 years, he traveled to 11 countries and conducted interviews with over 600 people, including federal officials, intelligence agents, and al-Qaeda members. The resulting book, The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, received widespread critical acclaim, was a National Book Award finalist, and went on to become a bestseller. And now he has turned his experience of writing the book into a one-man show starring himself. It's at the Culture Project in Soho, and the play called My Trip to Al-Qaeda runs through April 14th. It's directed by two-time Tony Award winner Gregory Mosher, and I'm very pleased it has brought both of them back to my show today. Hi.
Hi. Thanks.
And I could have mentioned Gregory Mosher's won every major award in theater. But Lawrence, it was announced yesterday that The Looming Tower has won the J. Anthony Lucas Book Prize. That's a cash prize. Congratulations.
Yes. It's a real honor as well.
The play opens with a thought shared by many people who watched the events of September 11th on television. It's like a movie. But in your case, wasn't there a bit of a real twist?
Yeah, because I had co-written a movie called The Siege, which in many ways prefigured the terrorism in New York, you know, with the strikes in New York, all the plot points, you know, the army in the streets of New York, the Arabs rounded up, suspects tortured. It was really uncomfortable to see the movie playing out over a long span of time.
And in the performance, you compare scenes from The Siege with photos from Abu Ghraib.
Yeah.
So was that eerie when you saw those photographs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, by the time Abu Ghraib came around, I was living in a state of anxiety that these subsequent plot points, the ones that hadn't fallen, were inevitably going to fall. And, of course, the Abu Ghraib photos are so resonant, and they look so much like the same scenes in the movie.
So were you feeling guilty? Boy, I did this, I made this movie, and now the world is imitating me?
I don't feel guilty, but I feel unsettled by it, because it was, at least, I'm not a prophet, but it was foreseeable. I foresaw it, and the director, Ed Zwick, it's just unnerving to think that you could imagine these events, and they paralleled what would happen so closely.
Gregory, probably one of the hardest things to direct is a one-person play, in this case with somebody who's not an actor. So how do you go about doing that?
It sounds silly, but I just urged Larry to be himself. He's phenomenally intelligent and charming and has really terrific presence, and all the audience ever wants is to hear a good story told simply and honestly, and he does that every night.
Did you know while you were working on the book that you might want to do something else with the material?
No, I hadn't thought about it, but when I was done with the book, I remembered a conversation I'd had long ago. Someone from David Hare's office had contacted me when he was working on his one-man play, which became Via Dolorosa, about his trip to Jerusalem. And he wanted to use a line that I had written about Jerusalem, which he wound up not using. But it planted this seed in my mind that that's an interesting thing to do. Then I had seen Anna Deavere Smith do Fires in the Mirror at the Public, and it was a very galvanizing moment for me, because I'd written plays before, and I am a journalist, but the combination of these two forms, it never occurred to me.
But when Joan Didion wanted to do something, she got Vanessa Redgrave to play her. In fact, in a play directed by David Hare.
Right.
Couldn't you have...
I tried to get Vanessa, but she was already occupied.
Vanessa Redgrave playing Lawrence Wright. Well, she would have probably... I'm sure if anybody could do it...
I'm sure someone else can play me more convincingly, and we're on the lookout for that guy.
Now, this isn't a staged version of the book.
No.
Did you feel you had to tell a different kind of story?
Yes, I had a different object in mind. One, I'm not a character in my book at all. I'm scrupulously not. But I'd had a lot of experiences. I'd met a lot of people, and I had things I had to sort out personally that I thought would be, for me, I always try to write them. But the form, it had to be something more intimate. And I also wanted to open up a conversation with other Americans about what's happened in our country, how we've changed because of those strikes.
In his review of the play, Charles Isherwood says your title is reminiscent of the title of a child's essay on a summer vacation.
Yeah.
Was that at the back of your mind?
There is a travelogue aspect to it, but I wanted people to, it is a journey, you know, where I'm taking people into a rather dark spot about Al-Qaeda, you know, who these people are, what they're like when you sit down and talk to the jihadi veterans of the Arab Afghans. And I'm just a representative of the community. And so I get a sense, you know, what would it be like if you were in my place? How would you feel? You know, how angry you would be sometimes, how hard it would be to control your emotions. And but mainly, I think, more than 5 years after 9/11, people still don't know who their enemy is and where they come from. And, for many people, this play is a revelation because it lays it out very frankly.
Well, how do you remain objective when you lose your temper with the people you're interviewing?
I wasn't always objective. It was.
But isn't that what journalists are?
Yeah, I tried to be. But, you know, it was still a very raw time, especially in the early months after 9/11. And, you know, when I was in Egypt, for instance, having talks with members of the Muslim Brothers, and they were blaming Israel for the strikes or the U.S. doing it to itself, and it just inflamed me. And there were just times I just lost control.
You tell a story about a hypnotized chicken to illustrate your feelings about Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, the object of that parable is that Saudi Arabia is in a kind of social coma. It doesn't have a civil society in the way that we think of it. And yet, why hasn't it changed? And the point I'm trying to make to people is that Saudi Arabia is surrounded by failed efforts at change. You know, the revolutions in Egypt and Somalia, Iran, Iraq, you know, all of them have led to more restrictive or disastrous situations. And that's what's kept Saudi Arabia in this frozen situation.
Well, Osama bin Laden grew up in Saudi Arabia. Would growing up in an autocracy like that prepare anyone for developing workable political theories?
No, there's no political life in Saudi Arabia at all. So
it's just a politics based on opposition?
They're not really politics, Leonard. There's dissidents, but there's not an agenda for, a new Saudi state. There is, the religious opposition to the royal family. But they don't have in place an agenda for what to do instead. This is true of all radical Islamists. If you ask them, what kind of economic model they follow, what kind of environmental policy they want to adopt, how they're going to deal with joblessness, they don't have any ideas. They're not interested in government. They're only interested in purification.
Speaking with Lawrence Wright, author of The Looming Tower, the award-winning book, now a play based on his experiences in writing that book called My Trip to Al-Qaeda, which he not only wrote but also performs at the Culture Project, 55 Mercer Street. Also here is Gregory Mosher, who used to run Lincoln Center, among other things. He was former artistic director at the Lincoln Center Theater, and is the director of this play. How did you get involved with this, Gregory?
I came in late. Larry had really solved most of the structural problems of the piece. One of the great pleasures of my life is I work at the New Yorker Festival, and Rhonda Sherman, who runs that festival, asked if I'd like to work on it, and I read Looming Tower first, and then I read the script, and then I met Larry, and it was a no-brainer to come and work on it.
I'm sure you've collaborated many times with playwrights on new pieces, but have you ever directed the playwright acting in his own piece before?
John Leguizamo in Freak, which I produced, but I worked on a lot, yes. But John and Larry had the same thing, which is they're simultaneously enormously involved in it and able to step back and be critical of it and make changes and want to make it better. And
Greg's a very consoling director for an amateur like me. So he's really been very supportive and given me the confidence to be out there.
I would assume that the more work you've done, the more directing you've done, the more patient you actually can be.
That's
because you have seen even great actors sometimes screw up.
It's so true. When you're a young director, you're always trying to establish your authority, and you yell and you scream and you're crazy. And as you get older, you seldom raise your voice, I think.
Well, you're not raising your voice right now. The play incorporates photos and videos. Were they part of the play, or were they something that...
Larry had already pulled all of that material together, and I think we, fine-tuned it, but it was there. Yeah.
And I had the help of people at the New Yorker, you know, behind me. That was really important. The photo editor pulled a lot of this material in for me and, you know, just had the resources at my command.
You use a film clip of al-Zawahiri making a speech from an Egyptian cell.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what that particular footage revealed to you about him.
What the reason I use that is that Zawahiri is really the brains behind al-Qaeda. He's the organizational genius. And people don't understand the depth of his fanaticism. And I make the point in the play that he started a cell to overthrow the Egyptian government when he was 15 years old. And when he was rounded
up... While he was going to medical school? Isn't he a doctor?
15. No, when he was in high school. He began his plans. And then... In 1981, after the Sadat assassination, he was rounded up with hundreds of other Islamists. And when he's making his speech to the international media, I think it's really shocking to members of the audience to see how many of them are, how dedicated they are to their cause. And this was, you know, 25 years ago.
I asked you earlier about growing up in the autocracy of Saudi Arabia. Well,
yeah.
This man grew up in another dictatorship. And I heard you this morning talking about whether they have any kind of a real political vision,
yeah,
of these people in al-Qaeda. You said that they wouldn't know John Maynard Keynes if he walked into the room.
I talked to one of Zawahiri's former colleagues in al-Jihad, which was his terror group in Egypt, and he had been in prison with Zawahiri, and he said, you know, it's so fortunate we didn't come to power because we didn't know what to do if we had gotten in control of the government. We didn't have any idea about who would be the minister of this or that, or we didn't even know the ministries existed.
Gregory, is it becoming more important for you to be part of timely political theater? Didn't you recently bring Vaclav Havel to New York for an artist residency?
We did at Columbia University, where I work now. He was there for 7 weeks.
That's the Columbia Arts Initiative?
It is indeed. And the focus of those 7 weeks was to connect Havel's life as an artist and his life as a dissident and a really transformational figure in the last 30 years. And yes, it is more and more important to me to get out of a narrow view of what entertainment is and start to figure out how writers and art can connect with the rest of the world.
Are you concerned at all at the effect on your personal life? I remember during the protests against the Vietnam War, many people discovered that they had files, even though they thought they had no reason to have files. And Larry reveals that the FBI and I guess the government in general, a couple of agencies were wiretapping him and following him.
I wasn't until you mentioned it, Larry, but I guess I am now. Sure. It'll be left over from my SDS file from 1968, I suppose.
Well, much of this play, Larry, is about what you think has happened to our country as a result of September 11th. Why do you think you became a subject of government inquiry?
Well, it's not surprising, given that I was speaking to a lot of people who were former members of al-Jihad or had been connected to al-Qaeda, members of bin Laden's family. You know. But
you had a record as a journalist. It's obvious what you were doing.
Pretty obvious. And moreover, I was always very helpful to, you know, I had spoken to FBI agents and helped them understand. You know, I'm always available to talk to anyone who really wants to understand who they're struggling against. So it wasn't that I was hoarding the information. I was trying to publish it as much as widely as possible. But I had a source at the Alex station, which was the virtual bin Laden station, told me that he had seen a transcript of a conversation I'd had with Zawahiri's uncle. And at the time, I thought, oh, those damn Egyptians. they had recorded it and sent it in to the CIA. It never occurred to me that my own government might be behind it. And then a couple of years later, when the FBI came to my house, they were looking into calls that had been made from my phone to a number in England, as it happens, to a lawyer in London who represents some of the jihadis that I've been interviewing. And they had somehow gotten my daughter's name, which, you know, she's not on any of our phones. And, you know, but that's the thing that I can't get around. You know, she's just a girl, you know. She's now an Al-Qaeda link on their link chart. And, you know, it's bad enough when you have your government spying on you, but when they're doing it so incompetently.
And how old was she when they decided she had to have an Al-Qaeda link?
I think she might have been 20 at the time. It, you know, it was infuriating, and it's not one of those things that's easily erased either.
Do you think that they finally have stopped following you? And
I don't know. I mean, you know, you look at the latest abuses on the part of the FBI with the national security letters. I honestly, Leonard, I don't know. And I don't know how to change my behavior as a result of it.
This is scheduled to run through April 14th. I don't know whether you'd like to see it extended. But what's going to happen afterward? Do you think that you'll be taking it around the country, or do you think that you can get another actor to play the part of Florence Wright?
We're talking about both of those things. I'd like to do it in Washington. I want to take it into the nation's capital so these matters can be discussed there. But there's a big part of me that really wants to go home. So if there was another actor that could do a better job of being Larry Wright than I am, then I'd be real happy to see that happen.
Gregory, have you stopped sending him notes?
No. But my note, have I? No. I just comment if it sounds more like Larry than it did the last time, then I'm happy because it's him settling in.
Well, he is playing himself. They say that's the easiest thing to do, but it turns out to be very difficult.
It's extraordinarily difficult. But this evening is so rich in information. You know, the theater's disappointing when you go and there's just not enough stuff coming at you, not enough mental information and emotional information or visual information. And Larry's chock-a-block, and that's why it works, it seems to me.
I thank you so much, both of you, for coming by today. My Trip to Al-Qaeda, written and performed by Lawrence Wright, directed by Gregory Mosher, running through April 14th at the Culture Project. That's at 55 Mercer Street. The phone number there, 212-352-0255, and I'm sure you can find out more information about it on our show page at wnyc.org as well.